Well, the House State Affairs Committee meeting to order today is Friday, May 17, 1991. The time is 8:10 a.m. We have a quorum with Representatives Moyer, Choquette, Baker, Miller, and Covina. We will be hearing SB 44 relating to construction and operation of veterans' homes, HB 251 relating to debt retirement fund, 252 relating to the appropriation of debt retirement fund, HJR 1 relating to the right to keep and bear arms, SJR 1 relating to the right to keep and bear arms, HJR 46 relating to a change of timing of veto override, HJR 50 relating to executive life IRS penalties, and other bills that have been previously scheduled, probably 308. First bill I'd like to take up this morning is House Bill 251, an act establishing the Alaska Debt Retirement Fund relating to the retirement of general obligation bond debt of the state and municipalities relating to the financing of capital projects and providing for effective dates. Mr. Stassley, would you join us at the table? The record should note that we've been joined by Representative Bruckman. Good morning, Representative Bruckman. We've heard this bill before and have discussed it somewhat. What is this amendment proposed at this time?
These are amendments that have been proposed by the Senate to the bill, and we'd like the bill to be the same when it gets through your group as it when it gets through their group, so we can have less difficulty getting it through.
So there's a slight change in the findings on the lease purposes.
Chairman. If you'd like, we can have Jack Reinhitter come to the table and explain to you the amendments.
For the record, I'm Jack Reinhitter with the Office of Management and Budget. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the first amendment there to HB 251 is just for one purpose, to make clear that the debt retirement fund could be used to pay lease purchase payments for state facilities, things like Spring Creek and the court building across the street, a new courthouse, and so on, if that's done as a lease purchase. And as Shelby said, that has already been incorporated in the Senate Finance version of the bill.
In the first page of amendments there, that's all that deals with three different places.
That's right.
In the second page?
That's just a minor technical amendment, really no substantive effect to the appropriation bill, House Bill 252, to delete the words available for appropriation. The language that appropriation refers to a balance that's referenced in the Department of Administration's annual financial report, and they no longer use that phrase, general fund balance available for appropriation, so they recommended that we just strike those three words.
Mr. Chairman.
The comments from the committee before you make a motion.
Getting to read you real.
On 251, are there comments from the committee or questions? Mr. Keller, are you here on this bill also? Do you have anything to add? You're all right. Yeah, you can pick you up there. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to just put in a strong plug for this particular bill. I know it's very difficult at the end of a session to try to lay a long-range solution in front of of anybody, legislative body or anybody, because the decisions you have to make are so immediate. This is a long-range solution to a very serious problem facing the state, not just state government, but local government. The moral obligation we have on this huge debt burden that municipalities have taken on is an enormous obligation we have, and it will be with us for about 10 or 12 years. This bill fashions a long-range solution to that problem. It also proposes a way to manage our debt, not just the state general obligation debt, but this local debt as well, using the state bond committee, which the bill goes into some detail as to how debt will be managed. And it anticipates that we're going to have to start using general obligation debt in the future, within the next few years, we believe, because of the declining revenues. And when we start looking at going back to state GO debt for schools and water sewer type projects, that just the conventional infrastructure projects that normally have been funded up until 1976 with statewide GO debt, that this will provide a way, a mechanism, to make some of those decisions a little bit easier. And the fact that school districts are going to have to start turning back to debt in the near future, too, because the priority school scheme only works when we have a huge amount of money on hand, and we don't have that anymore and won't have in the future. And so we're going to have to go back and figure out how to allow and encourage school districts to start incurring GO debt to meet their own needs. I don't think we should go back to the 80% formula, but I think we're going to have to go back to some kind of a 50% matching type debt reimbursement scheme. This fund would also make that possible once this thing starts growing and we've got the constitutional guarantee of a source of income to go into this debt retirement sinking fund. So the administration strongly supports this as one of what we consider one of the most important bills in the legislature. And we think it's a very sensible solution, long-range solution to a very significant statewide problem.
Anything to add?
Yeah.
Any other comments you need to make?
I have a question.
Thank
you. On page 3, line 22, it's paragraph B. And it indicates that reading that sentence in the paragraph has got me confused. Perhaps somebody can explain. Does the fund have to have at least $5 million minimum balance? Or is that when you put in a lump sum deposit?
Mr. Chairman, I could respond to the question, Representative Breckman. That language just mimics language that has been proposed also for the permanent fund. There's been some, it's been vague with the permanent fund when the balance is actually transferred into the permanent fund from the, as the money comes in. So that's just to clarify that the money must be transferred at least each month or when there's at least $5 million accruing, which would probably be more often than that once a month. This section, again, would only come into effect when the constitutional amendment was passed. It would not take effect under the statute alone.
In other words, if there's a balance of at least a minimum of $5
million. This would be the revenue stream, the same matching the revenue stream that's now going into the permanent fund. So it would be $350 million a year. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to come in, and as that accumulates to $5 million, which would be, a couple of weeks or less, then that money would be transferred into the debt retirement fund. Just to clarify how the money actually gets from the Treasury into the...
Okay,
fund.
And the $5 million, which is the numbers?
Again, that I think that's what has been worked out as reasonable with the Department of Revenue and the permanent fund, so it's near that.
Any other questions from the committee? Hearing no questions, Representative Schulte.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the amendment.
There's an amendment that would be the first page on the SNP file, three different pages.
HB 251.
Dealing with the finance, the acquisition of state facilities through lease purchase agreements. Is there objection to that amendment? Hearing no objection to that amendment. It's adopted. Is there other discussion on the bill? Hearing none, entertain a motion.
Chairman.
Representative Shelcat.
Move that pass HB 252 as amended by State Affairs out of committee with individual recommendations.
Are there objections?
I just thought we were on 251.
251, I'm sorry. My mistake.
251. Are there objections? Hearing no objections, 251 as amended, or CS for State Affairs, will be passed from the committee with individual recommendations. And let's get a CS for this as quickly as possible so it can be read across this morning if you need this. We have House Bill 252, which is the appropriation. basically says, the money left over after this year. So it says, it's not, if I explain this one also.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is there's currently a statute that was passed last year by the legislature that takes the surplus in this year and puts it into the statutory budget reserve fund. This bill changes that statute to put the money instead into this fund. And, but we would like to make a recommendation there. We've made an agreement with the Senate Finance Committee that the sum of $209 million will go into this fund and not the entire balance that's left at the end of this year. $209 million is what it will take to meet the debt service payments next year. And in order to get the fund started, we've agreed to allow that deposit into the fund. So we would make that suggestion that this bill be amended to show $209 million of the deposit into the fund.
So really, rather than this amendment that you have, Section 1 would just basically say sum of $209 million is appropriated into the this statutory debt retirement fund.
That's correct.
Sections 2, 3, and 4 would remain?
Yes. Well, no, this is the repealer, I think, of the Section 3 is the repealer, I think, of the of all of the excess monies going into the budget reserve fund, and so Section 3 would not apply any longer. Section 2 would.
Mr. Chairman.
That's okay.
Thank you, sir. Did then this amendment should be included to say to strike Section 3 in line 10?
Section 3.
Mr. Chairman, there's one technical issue here with the effective date in Section 4, which makes this appropriation effective when the when House Bill 251 would become effective. And I'll have to check the effective date on the appropriation made last year, which would put the general fund balance into the statutory budget reserve fund. My concern is that if we've got a later effective date in Section 4, the entire surplus may, if we leave it as is, the entire surplus may go into the statutory budget reserve fund. Before the $209 million could be taken off the top, so to speak. So I need to check the effective date on that appropriation to the budget reserve fund. I believe it would be effective at the end of the fiscal year, but.
Okay, you can deal with that on
yes.
The finance.
Yes, that's from me. Yes.
Commissioner Keller, anything to add? Anything from the committee? Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move this committee adopt amendment, the technical amendment to HB 252, including.
No, I think you're stating wrong because actually. This amendment, this whole, correct me if I'm wrong, this whole Section 1 would really just go, and the only thing we need to say is the sum of $209 million. So we don't need this technical amendment anymore. Representative, okay.
Thank you. I would move that we make the amendment to the sum of $209 million.
So the amendment is to
change Section 3.
Section 1 would read the sum of $209 million is appropriated into the budget reserve fund. And Section 3 would be withdrawn. Are there objections to that amendment? Are there objections to the amendment? Here are no objections. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill itself.
Move the bill with individual recommendations.
Representative Baker has moved to move HB 252 as amended State Affairs with individual recommendations. Are there objections? Hearing no objections, 252 is moved with individual recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We will discuss this matter with the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. It will be read across this morning. I'd suggest that each of you do the same so that he can either waive the bill or, which may not be easy to do, but he could hear this bill within 24-hour rule, so he could hear it as early as tomorrow, so that if you're successful there, it could be in finance on Sunday. And I will do the same. I called him already this morning, but he was not here. You're welcome. Thank you. Mary, do you understand the amendments to this one?
Yes. The only thing I didn't get was where the 2.9 went.
Get that from Mary.
Look.
This whole section is bond. And then you just, instead of that, the sum of $209 million is appropriated to the budget reserve fund.
Okay.
And you've got section 3.
Section 3 is here.
When they get those CSs.
Okay.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, you said to the budget reserve fund.
Oh, excuse me.
It's advertising.
Okay.
And then incorporating this.
No,
big deal.
Okay.
You're deleting that whole section anyways and just making it a straight appropriation. No language at all.
Eight parking tickets I got. You damn parking
tickets.
I saw them towing your car away.
No, it's an eight. Snookered me in the post.
Don't park in front of the car.
No, you said that. Sure.
Yeah. They'll be kids.
The next bill I'd like to take up today is SJR-1. SJR-1 is a companion bill to HJR-1. We have heard HJR-1 before us previously. It's a constitutional amendment on the right to keep and bear arms by Representative Donlin. SJR-1, the Senate version by Senator Rohde, has already come over, so that will be the vehicle. Representative Groomer, do you have your folder on there?
I have a copy of the book.
Do you have a CS for that?
Well, what I'm looking at is I want to make sure I get the right one before us. Do we have a State Affairs?
I have one, Mr.
So the State Affairs is the one that we have before us, the Senate State Affairs? Oh, that's our House CS. Commissioner Burton, would you join us, please? So SJR-1 is what we have before us. And are they identical? No, they are not. The HJR-1. And if you'd like someone else up here with you, that's fine, Commissioner.
Well, the last time here, I brought my attorney with me.
Good.
Okay.
We have Representative Groomberg, so we have no problems.
Well, you got us out good here.
Spitting out attorneys.
Got us out good here.
Commissioner, could you?
I'm standing on my fifth amendment.
Could you, first of all, possibly let us know what's the real differences between SJR-1 and HJR-1 before us?
Well, of course, the SJR-1 is a lot simpler. There's some added language in HJR. Now, I don't know if you got a committee substitute. I heard somebody talking about already, or is there more than just these two bills?
That
you don't want to
work that committee substitute.
We will talk about that in a second. We've heard HJR-1,
okay.
And I see it's that.
Well, the language in the amendment that's after infringed on line 7, when it starts, it speaks, it narrows it down to the use of, or possession of arms by individuals convicted of a crime and the carrying of concealed weapons on a person who may be regulated by the legislature. We feel, and put Dean Vanelli's here, that the Attorney General's office, that if it passes with that narrow language on it, although we believe that those things should be prohibited, that we should be allowed the state to control who uses weapons to some extent, you know, convicts and that sort of thing. But that would prohibit the type of thing that now have an acreage of just carrying a firearm, even though it's not concealed and you haven't been convicted of a felony, on school grounds, which has been a problem in Anchorage, not only Anchorage, but other places, but Anchorage passed an ordinance regarding that. Carrying weapons into a bar or possession while intoxicated or under the influence of drugs. Those kind of things, which I think we'd all agree is a reasonable control on the use of firearms. Our position for the police chiefs and law enforcement, my personal position as Commissioner of Public Safety, I own weapons, and I certainly think we ought to have the right. I think we have had since 1776, it's been pretty clear somewhere back in there, that I really don't understand the problem with the people that want to amend the Constitution. And we're one of the few states that does not go around amending the Constitution every year. Some states have amended their Constitution until you can hardly recognize the original document. I think it speaks well for our document. It was really well written to begin with, and it hasn't been amended that much yet. If we're going to amend this, to change it, to say the individual right, if that's what they want to say very clearly, we're only asking for one word to be inserted, particularly in SJR, before it says be denied, insert one word and say, may shall not be unreasonably denied. Now, I understand that some of the people in the Senate went over there had a problem with putting the word unreasonable in a constitutional document. But what they fail us to remember is it's in both the federal and the state constitution on search and seizures. There's a prohibition against unreasonable searches and seizures. Why did they put the word unreasonable in there? Except to allow that the state, there are times when it's necessary to do searches and seizures. And I think it's times when the state should be allowed to control the use of firearms, not the individual right to possession. But if you abuse that right, you're a serial killer, and we know you do it with certain types of weapons, maybe we ought to be able to prohibit you from owning and possessing those types of weapons. And I think that's conduct that's reasonable. And I think the word, if we insert that one word, unreasonable, to us, it would solve the problem that we see facing it. Because Dean can certainly talk about that. In some states where these kind of amendments were made, all the laws on the books against possession of firearms, even switchblades and things were taken off the books, and just about anything went as far as, there's enough of that even with the laws in the books now. It's enough to jumble out of it. We just see that is being real dangerous.
Mr. Chairman, if we look at the Senate joint resolution here,
yes,
not the House version,
right,
and we added the word unreasonable
before the word denies.
Yeah. Would you be satisfied with the Senate version?
That's what we've been asking for. I think that would do it. That's our opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Commissioner Burton. Commissioner Burton, there's another sentence on the House version of the joint resolution. The use of possession of arms by individuals convicted of a crime and carrying of a concealed weapon on the person may be regulated by the legislature. Would you comment on that, please?
We'd like to delete that last sentence and add the word unreasonable before the word denied.
It's the House State Affairs proposed CS. That's
no,
exactly.
No, sir. This is the House Joint Resolution number one I'm reading off.
Here's a copy of what we proposed.
I just wanted his confirmation. Through the chair, I just wanted his confirmation that they would like to see that denied or deleted.
Yeah, I think that what he's saying is that that this proposed CS meets his needs exactly.
Let's do this. There is in your packet on the SJR, the second page, is a proposed committee substitute. If we might, somebody move that, and then at least that gives us a basis for discussion.
I would move that.
Representative Bruckman?
I object because I don't have all
Do you have it on your, do you have the SJR?
She doesn't have this one.
I didn't have the House joint. I have the House CS for Senate.
Mr. Chairman, isn't the vehicle the Senate?
Yes, and that's what that is. It's a House Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution.
I thought we were talking about the House.
No. Representative Schoenfeld.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the House CS for Senate Joint Resolution as amended by State Affairs.
Okay, there is a motion to have the House CS before us. Is there objection to having it before us? Hearing no objections. We are now dealing with the House CS for SJR-1, so let's work off that paper. Everybody have that in front of them? Representative Bruckman, do you have that bill?
Yeah.
We're on our CS. for SJR 1.
Might
we have another copy of that, please?
Here. Take mine.
Yes, sir. Yes, of course.
Okay.
No, the house, the house.
That's it? Okay.
Yes, but you want it.
Yeah, that's...
I think that's okay. That's fine.
All right. And that would read, then, the right to keep and bear arms, the individual, and then that part in brackets is out, the individual right to keep and bear arms shall not be unreasonably denied or infringed by the state or political subdivision. Yes. Comments from the committee. Rep. Sam Breckman.
I think it negates the original version of the definite right for individuals to bear arms.
I guess then my question would be, should the state or political subdivisions have any authority to control guns at all? And if the answer is no, they should not be able to control them whatsoever, then you would probably be opposed to this. But if you believe that they have the right, in fact the responsibility, to put certain controls on guns, as the commissioner stated, like on school grounds, people that are drunk, etc., then you need some type of language that indicates that it would not, you know, would not be unreasonable. And I guess what the courts then would have the onus would be on them to determine what if something was reasonable or unreasonable, and that would be a key word in there. Mm-hmm. That the courts would eventually, if that became a problem, would be able to, would eventually determine what really is reasonable and unreasonable.
Same as a U.S. search warrant.
Right. Although I feel that's the duties of the legislature. And
well, if even well, we are the state. We would be
right,
one of those people
right,
that would
right.
that would be able to do that also.
No, but yeah, the legislature would still legislate the laws as they are on the books now, and of course, we interpret as we do with anything else. It's a constitutional issue, but it just gives the government the authority to prohibit someone standing out here on the street firing a submachine gun through the windows of the legislative building. You know, I think that kind of conduct, well, maybe sometimes, sure. That is, that, you know, that's kind of conduct we're talking about.
Could reconsider.
Yeah, right. Quizzle with a hit.
I see we have people from Military and Veterans Affairs. The thing that bothers me a little bit is that the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs is almost, well, it's not unique, but it's got a special constitutional mandate that's not often recognized. The Department of Education has a specific constitutional provision that there's a constitutional right to an education. That's in the Constitution. Another provision is health. That's in the Constitution. Well, the National Guard is protected in our Constitution by saying, right here, the right to bear arms is tied up with the right to a National Guard. We have a constitutional right to a National Guard. We can't abolish it. And that is something that's left over from the colonial days. I strongly support the individual right here, but I do not want to remove the constitutional status of the National Guard. I think that's extremely important, and I've never seen it discussed before. So what I would like to see and suggest, and I think, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to hear from the folks from the department who were here, Military and Veterans Affairs, I would like to see the individual added, but I don't want to see the National Guard deleted. And I think we can do both by crafting this appropriately. But I definitely don't want to remove the constitutional status of the National Guard in this.
Chairman. In our backup, we do have some that there are 9 states that have no provisions in their constitution right now dealing with arms, so I would suspect they would not have any dealing with the National Guard. I don't really feel that as a major problem because every state has a National Guard. I think we're making a problem out there that isn't a problem.
Question the word militia. Keeping the word militia and
yes.
adding the individual.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not saying it is a problem, but I want it legally to remain in there so that at some future time when somebody tries to, if they ever thought about abolishing the National hard, they couldn't do it. I'm not saying it's a problem. I don't want to take a constitutional step backwards.
Sam Miller, anymore?
No.
Any comments on this, Representative Burton? Commissioner Burton?
No, sir.
I didn't mean to give you a pay decrease there, Commissioner. I'm sorry.
No, it's we certainly like the language and agree with the House Committee substitute for Senate joint resolution that you just read is satisfactory with us.
Jeff, you might just comment if you could. Do you feel that after a quick look at this that it in any way endangers the constitutionality of the Guard or militia in the state?
If I may,
go ahead.
It's very difficult to do a very quick overview to even comment on that. The brief time I had to look at it, I'd say no, but it's difficult without having a constitutional lawyer take a look at something like that with all the potentials. I'm not trying to avoid the issue, it's just difficult to answer.
Let me say that at this late date of this session, one of the things we tried to do is allow the Judiciary Committee some time to review this issue, to move this across. On the other hand, we don't want to move across a bill that is, that we're not more comfortable or as comfortable with as possible. We are quite limited on our time today. I know that we have one other gentleman signed up, and I would like to hear from him. So, Commissioner, maybe if you could don't leave us, though, because we'll probably want you back. Mr. Bishop, would you like to testify? Have you seen the CS?
No, Mr. Chairman, I have not.
Staff, will you see that there? Is there CSs on the table? Would you get them on the table, please? Could you state your name and who you're representing for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dick Bishop, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska Outdoor Council. The Alaska Outdoor Council has supported SJR1 in its original form very strongly and in several earlier iterations of it. We still feel that that language is best, and I won't take a lot of your time. I guess I would simply say two things. One, I did sit through and was involved to some extent in the discussion of SJR1 when it was in the Senate. And it became very clear to me, I don't purport to be an expert on this issue in terms of constitutional law or anything like that. My interest and the interest of the Outdoor Council is in our members being able to have full rights as we believe they exist within the framework of the federal constitution and the state constitution. And what it comes down to is that after lengthy discussion in the Senate committee, it was not at all clear that the individual rights of a person to keep and bear arms, quote unquote, were protected. The Attorney General's office was unable to reassure that committee that with the existing language in our state constitution, that a person's individual rights to keep and bear firearms was protected. And for me, that was a watershed in the discussion. It demonstrated very well that in terms of legal interpretation was not at all clear. We would like to have it clear. And I don't believe, and we don't believe, as an organization, nor do I think that the NRA believes, and I do not speak for them, although I am a member, that the wording, the individual right to bear arms, should be modified by putting unreasonably denied, or however it goes, because that essentially throws open the question of what is reasonable, what is unreasonable. Further, in my way of viewing the problem, and I could be wrong, I grant you that, I don't know of anything that is in the Constitution, ours or the federal Constitution, that is not subject to interpretation through statutes and subsequently regulations by the appropriate body. And therefore, I don't see that the adoption of SJR1, for example, would preclude the right or the authority or the responsibility, for that matter, of the legislature to implement that as appropriate through their authority to carry that out. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I would simply say, would you consider a comparable amendment that said the right to free speech shall not be unreasonably denied. I think if you put it in that context, it puts it in the light of what we're really talking about in terms of the rights of individuals. And I suggest that that modification of the right of free speech would be totally unacceptable, and I think we're talking about a completely analogous situation here.
Question, Mr. Bishop. Well, one of the problems that we have with this amendment is the law enforcement officers of an association, Police Chief Association, obviously the commissioner. I think everybody wants to make sure that by putting a constitutional amendment in, that we're not tying the hands of our law enforcement people, that someone just can't come out because of something we put in our constitution and own or threaten or endanger, obviously, the regular citizenry. And the right of reasonably free speech does not have the ability to kill and maim people. And obviously, arms do. And granted, it's not the guns that do it, it's the people that do it. And that's, I think, exactly what the commissioner is trying to make sure that he has the ability to regulate, not so much keep people from having guns, but keep ensure that obviously people are, they have the right to regulate to the extent that we are protected as individuals, and I think we have a real balancing act here. Representative,
in fact, the way the courts have interpreted the free speech amendment is it's not absolute. As Oliver Wendell Holmes said, no one has a constitutional right to shout fire in a crowded theater. You don't have a right, under a case called Brandenburg, to incite a riot. You don't have a right to what are called fighting words, to incite somebody to fight with you. Libel and slander have certain restrictions. So the question is, who decides what is the boundary of the constitutional protection? And what is the boundary? And certainly the word reasonable or unreasonable would give the courts more discretion. I think that's fairly clear. But even if it's not there, there's got to be some discretion.
Representative Brock.
I would think that this discretion is inherent in the court system, and our system's worked well. We have a right to life, liberty, and happiness. And I think that's a balancing act with the right to bear arms. You know, obviously, if someone was shooting in a theater full of people, they're taking away the ability of people to be happy or have life. So, I mean, we've functioned, and I support the original Senate bill that's been co-sponsored. Other right to bear arms, I agree with the speaker that would reasonably would delete. And I don't see where there's been a need in the past.
Mr. Bishop?
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond to Representative Gruenberg, I think you've made my point that given the language of the right to free speech, it's not immune to regulation. And that's the point I was trying to make with SJR.
Okay.
And I think that's a very important point to have been made, and I appreciate you making.
It's interesting that we, our disagreement here seems to be with the word unreasonably. And how could people, it seems like, disagree that you would not want to unreasonably deny somebody something, and yet that word seems to put too much restriction on something. Well, I hope that nobody's going to be unreasonable.
If I could add just a couple of comments. The commissioner mentioned situations in other states where there were problems. Nebraska was one, West Virginia was one. To the best of my knowledge, although there was an initial confusion about the interpretation and application of the laws in those states, that those have been cleared up, and that it has been found that in those examples, it did not, the passage of an amendment similar to SJR1 did not preclude regulation of the possession and use of firearms by people, and that ultimately came out. So that was very helpful. And I guess I'd have to point out that there are a number of things that are precluded by federal law. The example the commissioner used, the machine gun in the legislature, however appropriate or inappropriate it may be, is prohibited by federal law, first on the basis of having a machine gun, and certainly on the basis of using one in that way. So I think it's important to try to keep it down to realistic terms also. The Outdoor Council has passed a resolution strongly supporting SGR1. I'd like to leave a copy of that with you.
I believe
we may have it already.
One of the problems has been, there have been a couple of recent cases, and maybe Mr. Guarnelli can bring us up to date, or Commissioner Burton. One that I was a West Virginia case, and one was a case that was from a lower court in Kansas or someplace like that, and it was on appeal. And basically, what they said was because of some liberalizing amendments to this constitutional amendment under those two state constitutions, certain statutes were unconstitutional. And Ms. Horesky, I see, is nodding. Maybe somebody could enlighten us on those couple of cases, because they're kind of central to the question here.
Mr. Chairman, I can't help you on the details. I do know that in the case of Nebraska, which was one, the court essentially said that authorities could not regulate the use of a firearm by felonies, as best I can recall. That was appealed, and it was subsequently changed. Conclusion, as I recall it, was
reversed.
Yeah.
Maybe Ms. Weekend. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop.
Thank you.
Could we ask Mr. Orr? Let me see. I've read at least one of the cases, but I don't remember.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dean Guarnelli. I'm with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. Mr. Bishop's explanation of the Nebraska case is correct. A lower court had struck down firearms laws, and for a period of months, in the state of Nebraska, there was some uncertainty as to exactly what could be regulated and what could not until their Supreme Court reversed that lower court opinion. The West Virginia situation was a review of a statute passed by the West Virginia legislature that the Supreme Court of West Virginia struck down as not being in compliance with their recently amended constitution. During the debates in West Virginia, the NRA swore to the legislature that there would be no problem if the courts would not strike down any of the laws. Well, the courts, in fact, did strike down the West Virginia law, and the West Virginia legislature had to go back and draw up another statute that was more to the court's liking. And that's precisely the problem that we've been trying to bring to everyone's attention for quite some time. The courts apply different standards of review for different constitutional rights. There are some constitutional rights, such as involving equal protection when race is an issue, when the courts say, unless you can show an overriding, compelling state interest, that statute which affects is based on race is going to be struck down. There are other standards of review where the courts say, as long as the legislature has a reasonable basis for doing what it is doing, then the statute is constitutional. And the problem with this particular the original Senate joint resolution is that, in my view, it equates the right to bear arms with the much higher standard of review. In other words, as a prosecutor, I would be required to first prove, before I could prosecute a case, I would have to prove that the law in question, the firearm law in question, is constitutional and that there was an overriding, compelling state interest for that law. Not that it was reasonable, not that it was rational, not that the legislature had a good reason, but that the legislature had an overriding, compelling, necessary reason for doing that. And with some of our state laws, I can tell you that's a very difficult thing to do. I mean, with felon in possession laws, can anyone articulate to me, under our current law, they are prohibited from having handguns, and those kinds of laws, I think, are subject to being struck down. On the other hand, if we insert the word unreasonably in here, then the courts have a different standard of review, and they can look at the law and determine, did the legislature have a rational reason for doing this? Not an overriding, compelling, necessary reason, but a rational reason, and that would be the standard of review. The problem is this very debate is going to be used in a court of law, and defense attorneys are going to say, look, there are several legislators who said, we don't want the word unreasonably in there. We want a higher standard of review. That is the problem. That's the problem we're trying to avoid. I can tell you there have been other arms laws struck down, as Commissioner Burton said. The switchblade law in Oregon is unconstitutional. We have a switchblade law in Alaska. The Oregon court did a very thorough analysis of the use of knives throughout history as weapons, and they concluded that there is a right to bear arms, switchblades, in Oregon. in Colorado, they in essence struck down a part of their concealed weapons law. The law in Colorado is now, by Supreme Court opinion, that as long as the person can show that he was carrying that concealed weapon for self-defense, that's okay. In other words, in Colorado and certain places in Denver, let's say, you've got drug dealers riding around in cars with concealed weapons, they can't be prosecuted. Their defense simply is, hey, I'm a tough guy, I've got lots of enemies, I'm carrying this for my protection, and the prosecutors right now cannot beat that. I mean, that is a defense in the state of Colorado under Colorado Supreme Court opinion that's been in effect for a number of years, based on the right to bear arms. That's the problem with applying such a very high standard of review to this. That's why inserting the word unreasonably is the thing that is going to protect the law enforcement interests and protect the public welfare.
Thank you, sir. Well, and I do have to tell the committee we are under a time constraint here. I had given my word that we would not go past 9 o'clock, and I do want to move out two other bills.
Thank you. This is my fourth term in the legislature. I have co-sponsored this bill every term. This bill has come up every session, every legislature. Well, your testimony now, Mr. Guarnelli, is the single most persuasive piece of testimony I've heard in four terms.
I've often wondered why this is such a big deal, to be honest with you. I don't think we have a problem in Alaska. I think, but it gets very emotional with the number of people in our state, and I know that and people that are running for election, if you don't come out and say everybody can have anything they want as far as guns, hand grenades, and howitzers, why some organizations seem to attack you because you're for gun control or something, but I've never once heard anybody really describe a problem for anybody having a gun in Alaska.
That would be a problem if we have drug dealers going around with concealed weapons claiming they're for self-defense. You know, we just passed House Bill 104, which was the weapons, a major tightening of the weapons thing. And if that's going to be thrown out for something like this, we've got serious problems, folks. And I'll stand up to my constituents and say the same thing to them, Senator Yule.
One of the problems, I think, too, is that different smaller municipalities and localities can have their own little rules, their own little laws that both of us who live in other areas of the state don't know as we drive through. And I think the law needs to be explained.
Do you know any of those in the state, the people who are restricted?
There was a thing in Anchorage, not just the schools, and that needs to be advertised well. When you're going hunting, I think with the excuse that you're going hunting, you can have a loaded weapon in the automobile, as you're trying to say. You're allowed to have a loaded weapon in an automobile if it's visible. I'll talk to Commissioner Burton later.
Representative Grunberg's comment on worried about we're doing away with the militia. I don't have that problem. I don't see it as a problem, but an alternative would be to this to be a separate article to the Constitution and still keep the one that we have now.
Or just have two different sub-A and sub-B.
Yeah, but, I think that's something that you can talk more on in judiciary. Is that a place that you could deal with that, Representative Grunberg? We're going to lose our quorum. Is that a problem here?
That's fine with me. I think that we have a number of things that need to be discussed in this. I'll deal with them in judiciary, but I am not, unless somebody convinces me that it's a good idea to remove the constitutional status of the National Guard, I'm not about to do that.
I would entertain a motion to include that sentence.
So moved.
That the right to keep and bear arms or a well-regulated militia be necessary for the security of free state.
Another way of dealing with that, as Mr. Guarnelli gave me a note, would be to simply, it'd have to change us around a bit. What the language would be, Mr. Chairman, would be, it would be the right to keep and bear arms, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people individually and collectively to bear arms shall not be unreasonably denied or infringed by the state or a political subdivision. That would do it. It'd be the simplest way, the least change in our current. And I would like to, matter of fact, I will offer that. So the language of the thing would be a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people, comma, individually and collectively, comma, to keep and bear arms shall not be unreasonably denied or infringed by the state or political subdivision of the state. And I'll run with that.
I see a lot of heads shaking. Is there objection to that amendment?
Would you repeat it one more time?
Yes, if I may. Okay.
You get this, Mary?
Right to keep and bear arms. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people, comma, individually and collectively, comma, to keep and bear arms shall not be unreasonably denied or infringed by the state or a political subdivision of the state.
Do you object?
I don't like the wording. Object.
There is an objection.
What wording is it?
What did, may I ask what the representative's problem with the wording is?
Oh, I guess you're going back to the original language, and I think...
You don't like the unreasonably? Is that what you're getting at still?
I don't like, correct. I am still objecting to unreasonably, but I also understand the representative's concern about militia, but I think it ought to be... I think it ought to go back to the original bill and have the individual, comma, and state militia have the right to keep and bear arms. Because this is the intent, I believe, of the wording of the bill was to identify the individual, is to zero in on the individual to make sure that it's clear. And this causes an opportunity.
Maybe we can do it in two sentences. But, before this thing reaches the floor, mm-hmm. I think that's an issue that needs to be dealt with. And I will have serious problems if we remove the constitutionally protected National Guard status.
I agree with you.
Well, that's why I thought keeping the very original same paragraph, the first that's in there right now, okay. And then making a second paragraph dealing with individuals.
That's fine with
me. And that way there will be no question that one paragraph is dealing with the militia, the second paragraph is dealing with an individual.
I would remove my motion and replace it with that motion.
So the first paragraph would stay as in the Constitution it is, and that would not be amended. The second paragraph would say the individual right to keep and bear arms shall not be unreasonably denied or infringed by the state or a political subdivision of the state.
Yes, my suggestion, Mr. Chairman, is we make it one paragraph, just two sentences in the paragraph.
Okay.
That's my motion. So the first sentence remains as is.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Period.
Just as it's in there. So there's no change in that constitutional paragraph. Then a second paragraph or second sentence that says the individual right to keep and bear arms shall not be unreasonably denied or infringed by the state or political subdivision.
Of the state.
Okay.
That's my motion.
That is a motion. Is there objection to the motion to amend or support a CS? Hearing no objection, that CS is adopted and before us.
I move the bill with individual recommendations.
There is a motion to move the bill with individual recommendations. Is there objection? Hearing no objections. House Committee substitute for SJR 1 State Affairs is moved with individual recommendations. HJR 1 shall remain in our possession and in our what we call terminated file.
That sound like a movie.
And I apologize to tell legal I'm sorry, but we'll have to redirect. We've worked that. And there's not much of a hurry on this. It's not going to be heard, so get a work draft back. I would like to.
Objection,
Bush. Oh,
well,
it's too soon.
How much time do you have?
15 minutes.
Okay, good.
What's your appropriate?
No, 308. But she's got another committee.
Time to do 308.
Yes. If you're all right.
I'm all right.
Going.
Hey, wait. We need you.
Okay. We got 15 minutes here. Mary, would you get 308 for us, please? Next bill I'd like to bring up is HJR 46. No, let's leave that to last. Let's bring up HJR 50 quickly. I believe this is a very non-controversial. It's a resolution. Question the President of the United States to urge moderation in the assessment in the assessment of tax penalties against Executive Life Company. Is there anyone from Representative Copeland's office here? Hearing none. I've read it. I believe it's basically the IRS has also filed suit against Executive Life. I think what Representative Copeland would like to do is to get them to moderate themselves so that the individuals that have money in there get theirs first, basically. I'll hear a motion. There's a motion to move HJR 50 with individual recommendations. Is there objection?
I've got an experience on this thing, and I don't know why, but something, but I read this thing before, something really bothered me about it. I guess one thing it does, Mr. Chairman, is that I've never seen anything through this legislature urging the state or the feds not to tax a particular company. And it's just a precedent, I guess, that bothers me. I'm not saying don't pass the bill out, but I'm just expressing, verbalizing to you a gut feeling I have.
It doesn't
say
that. It says to exercise caution when imposing penalties on Executive Life, bearing in mind the hardship to individuals that the demise of Exxon's life will cost.
I understand the wording of it anyway. I didn't express myself, and I'm certainly not going to object to this, but I just wanted you to know that I have a gut feeling that something bothers me about this.
Well, not knowing what it is.
Make laws to taxes and not to taxes.
Are there objections to moving the bill out? Hearing no objections, HJR 50 is moved to the committee with individual recommendations. Next bill I'd like to hear very quickly is House Bill 308. House Bill 308 has been before us before. The only thing we're saying on here is it's... The only thing that we're really changing on this, as I see it, is withdrawing the word adoption within 5 days of adoption and saying within 5 days after filing by the Lieutenant Governor. That's the only change, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And why is this change necessary? Would you state your name and...
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeff Bush. I'm Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. The reason this change is necessary is a recent Superior Court decision in Fairbanks. The Department of Law has always interpreted the law as being that notice of an emergency regulation had to be published within, it's either 5 days or 10 days, depending on how you interpret the statute, but had to be published within a time limit of filing, because it made no sense to have to publish a regulation that was never going to be filed. Frequently, emergency regulations are adopted by an agency, and then somebody decides that they don't want to adopt them after all, within a few days afterwards, they sort of, things like that occur. It frequently happens with boards and commissions. The boards of fish and game frequently adopt emergency regulations, and then 2 or 3 days later will adopt another one that will change the first one, remove the first one. All of that means that we have always interpreted that the time limits for publishing notice of an emergency regulation should run from the time that the regulation actually takes effect, not from the time that some board takes some action that might never actually result in a regulation. The court said... Essentially said, we sympathize with your quandary here, but the way the law reads is it says 5 days from adoption, and we don't see any way we can get around it. Practically speaking, it is impossible to implement that the way the law reads right now.
This has nothing to do with any new changes within the executive branch.
Absolutely none.
Entertain a motion.
I would like a copy of the judge's opinion if you could get that to me, Jeff. Number two, are you appealing the Shepherd case?
Mr. Chairman, no, we are not, and the reason is that the record in that case, we weren't even aware, the regulations experts in the Department of Law weren't even aware that this case existed. It was handled as a minor criminal matter, and the judge essentially decided it on issues that were not even briefed. And we decided that the record really was not complete enough to appeal it, so what we're doing is we've now put out essentially an all-points bulletin to the entire department that if this issue ever comes up in another case, we will brief it completely at the Superior Court level again.
But now, was this a Superior Court or a District Court?
Superior Court.
What is the possibility of getting them to relax the rule? One of two things. Either getting them to relax the rule to allow you to appeal it, or alternatively, having an amendment to this bill that either indicates that it is our intent that this was a wrong, I mean, essentially, that the word adopt should not be interpreted in this manner, or alternatively having a retroactive application of this thing.
Mr. Chairman, there's a few, one thing, the transmittal letter that came essentially says that the purpose of this bill is to affirm longstanding state practice, and that should be enough to essentially affirm what has happened in the past, except for this particular case. But in this particular case, it turned out that one other reason we did not appeal it is that it became academic because the emergency reg, in fact, the department decided not to allow it to become permanent anyway. And so per Judge Green's throwing of that regulation out made no difference except for that one individual in that case, and it didn't matter for the state.
You don't think it would help at all for us to add an intent language here tracking your transmittal letter?
I don't think it makes much difference, Mr. Chairman, because I think that the transmittal letter is part of the legislative record already, and that indicates the administration's intent and why the legislation was introduced.
I would like to talk with you. This is going to go to judiciary. I'm not certain, given the fact that we've got isolated Superior Court and District Court people from here to goodness knows where, that they're going to look at your transmittal letter when they see a case that comes hot off the bench. I think that had better be in the statute itself. This is a very important issue.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bloomberg is correct. It's an important issue because if the same reasoning were applied, there are several, probably hundreds or even thousands of regulations on the books right now that under this reasoning could be thrown out. And that's why it's somewhat dangerous that we have to make it clear that what we're doing is affirming what's the practice that's always been done, and we're essentially retroactively recognizing those cases, those situations.
Mr. Chairman, I am not going to, I'd like to see the bill pass. I think this is an important bill, and I'd like to talk to you later to prepare an amendment either for the Judiciary Committee or if it's waived to put it on the floor, and I'd like this committee to know it's my plan. And normally, if we were earlier in the session, I wouldn't want the bill to move until I had 24 hours to do that. We don't have the time, but I want to prepare that before this thing passes the House. And I'd like to work with you on that, because I don't want to rely on a transmittal letter in an obscure journal. Thank you. I certainly have no objection to moving the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
one more comment, very briefly, just so that the committee's aware of what's going on. In the Senate side, this bill is now in rules, and I understand being scheduled on the Senate side. It is identical, except they've changed the title. Unfortunately, I understand they made a Rules Committee title change yesterday, and I can't get a copy of that bill anywhere at the moment, and so I can't even give you what the new title looks like on the Senate side. The bill has not been changed. The substance of the bill has not been changed.
But I'd like the record to reflect that what I think we need to do here. We've got a sandwich version we use.
Is there a motion?
I saw a motion.
There is a motion to move 308 out of committee with individual recommendations. We understand. Is there any objection? House Bill 380, the latest move.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With individual recommendations.
Look, may I just ask the members, will anybody have any problem with that kind of an amendment that I'm talking about?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
I was
you're
so
not
confused.
Sure.
I'm okay. Living in your
the
hands.
Next bill before us is Senate
you're
Bill
sure
44.
Let's talk about
Senate Bill 44 by Senator Kurtula relating to construction of operation of State Veterans Home, elected by Kathy Hathaway. Senator Kurtula's office to join us at the committee table, please. We're going to lose our quorum on this committee. We're dealing right now with the Military and Veterans Affairs Bill. Kathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a very simple piece of legislation. It authorizes the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to construct and operate veterans' homes in the state, similarly to the statute which authorizes the construction of pioneers' homes, as the statute is modeled on. There's federal money, 65% of the construction costs can be handled by the federal money, 35% by the state. Alaska has a very high percentage of veterans. There are between 65,000 and 75,000 in the state. We've been contacted by numerous veterans groups. All are very, very supportive of the legislation. Paula Escobera with Legislative Research is here. I think if anybody has any questions, if I can't handle them, I'm sure that Paula could answer them for you.
Would you tell us the difference, please, between the Senate version and the House Military and Veterans Affairs?
The House Military and Veterans Affairs version, the Senate version authorized the establishment of veterans' homes in the Mountain Susitna Valley area and other areas of the state that's modeled on the Pioneers Home statute, which says Sitka and other areas of the state. It has never precluded Pioneers Homes in any other location, and that is the version that Senator Cortuna supports. The Military and Veterans Affairs Committee added Anchorage and Kodiak, and at other sites designated by the Adjutant General. Senator Cortuna is concerned that if this continues through the House committee process, we're going to end up with a list of about 7 lines long of possible locations. The Matanuska Susitna Valley is not mandated in this legislation.
The record should show there is a letter of intent that we will pass along with this bill from the Senate. The letter of intent says it's turned legislator passed SB 44. A veterans home facilities project effective date should not preclude communities other than those in Matanuska Susitna Valley area being considered as the site of the first state's veterans home in Alaska. Okay, so thank you, Kathy.
Move it.
Rick and Warren?
I thought I just heard you say that this bill does not mandate that a home be established and operated in the valley.
No.
That's exactly what it says on the second page. No matter what the intent language says.
Representative Moyer, shall establish and operate veterans homes in the Matanuska Susitna Valley and other sites. We've been informed, Senator Cortuna has been informed by the drafting attorneys that that does not require the Matsu Valley to be the location. The location ultimately will be determined by where the legislature appropriates the money. It will be a legislative decision.
I'd like to agree with the lawyers, but I just don't see it. It says shall establish and operate in the valley and anywhere else designated.
For the representative's information, if that was my amendment, I feel we need to, I offered a choice, either not say anything or put the locations in. I think it's better to say nothing. And I feel very strongly about this, and the senator knows of my view. He and I have had private and public conversations on this. And I will not support the proposed State Affairs CS. I would support either the Military and Veterans Affairs version, and if you wanted to add something else, or just to say nothing and leave it up to the administration. But I just can't have Matsu and nothing else said. I'm sorry. This is a bill I feel very supportive of, but that was one problem. And it's either fair to everybody one way or the other, and that's where I'm going.
I guess maybe I'm confused now. What is the Military and Veterans Affairs? I don't have that.
I didn't have it here. Yes.
You didn't have that in your packet. Where's your packet?
It's all right here, wasn't there?
All right, thank you, Kathy. Let me bring up Mr. Bush next, please.
Sorry.
Jeff, would you come? I'm sorry, Jeff.
Is someone making an amendment?
General, would you like to?
Please. Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Go ahead, John.
I don't see that the mentioning of the names of communities prioritizes in any way where the first home or subsequent homes would be built. However, we have no objection to not naming any communities either. So basically, the language of the bill as it reads right now, in my mind, doesn't dictate that you will, in fact, build a home there. The appropriation of the funds is going to dictate that in the end. But again, we would not object to striking those communities.
Do you think that if we left in Matsu, does it give them a little edge even, or it's really still all up to when we go?
I think when you get down to the bottom line at the end, it's going to be where the money is appropriated for. So whether you leave, you could leave Matsu in there, and it might possibly give an edge when it came time to appropriate funds. But the final direction is in fact going to be dictated where that appropriation is designated for. But anytime you you identify something specifically, then I guess you could say that you've given an edge to it.
Are there any questions in the committee?
I assume we want to give an edge to it. That's the purpose of this.
Well, I think
partly
if you take
the purpose of the legislation.
That's right.
Yes. If you take, you know, and I understand that I was born and raised outside the Anchorage area, okay, as opposed to inside it. But there are a majority of probably veterans living in and around that area, and probably with some of the other, maybe, and I'm not saying that's where we should build it, you know, but maybe that was the intent of the author of the bill in his mind, and now I'm trying to interpret someone else's thoughts. But again, I don't have any problem with Nat Sue being in there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it sounds logical to me to assume that probably is the most veterans in that Anchorage area, whether it's Anchorage or Nat Sue. Makes no difference to me. I'm Fairbanks. It just seems to me that if we want it there, we ought to say it and be done with it. Or, because the way I read it, I guess you could read it the other way. If we are going to try and write it this way and then say, well, it doesn't really mean it has to be there, well, maybe we ought to have another sentence saying this is not a priority, and because we mentioned it doesn't give it an edge or whatever. Or just be done with it and say, if that's where we want it, that's where we want it.
I'm going to lose my quorum here. General, I think we got the gist of your comments, and what I'd like to hear is Harlan real briefly here, if I could, because I believe he'll bring in a totally different viewpoint here.
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, Harlan Nuts, Alaska Hospital and Nursing Home Association, really speaking for the record and not and speaking strongly of support care for veterans. That isn't the argument. The argument is what's the best way to provide that care? I want to give you very briefly a report from the Divisional Licensing, and basically that report just alerts you as you move through this process that you've got 140 empty nursing home beds around this state, and I think that you ought to consider that when you enact this legislation. The second thing I want to do is and I run this up the flagpole with Senator Katula, and believe me, he does not like it. I want to be everybody really clear. And remember the old political axiom, if you miss with a bull, you have to get the sharp horn in your pocketbook. But we're in too late with these ideas. But what we would like to suggest for the bill, and we'll take this on to the Finance Committee, is number one, we've got, and there is a need for nursing home care for veterans. Why don't we get some money right now and start purchasing care? Why don't we give the Division of Military Affairs some money, and let's move this year. We're 2 or 3 years down the road before we do anything for the veterans. Let's get started now. So that's my first suggestion. The second suggestion is we don't know what the Division of Military Affairs knows about building or running nursing homes. And we think that they need an advisory committee. And in my letter here, we'll suggest to you an advisory committee. And with that, Mr. Chairman, we wish you well with the bill.
Thank you, Harlan.
I haven't performed this much physical labor either.
Camera.
Thank you.
Well, my first question is, can I get someone to move the State Affairs Committee substitution?
I'm going to object, Mr.
I asked a question. Can I get someone to move?
Look at him shaking his head at me.
Not this reference. I love the bill. I was going to introduce it myself.
Tom, you move it. You move it. Receive all that. Can I get someone to make a motion to move the House Committee substitute for Committee substitute Senate Bill number 44, State Affairs?
So I'm not satisfied, Mr. Chairman, with the discussion we've had yet. I don't understand what's going on.
Well, let me just tell you in point blank terms what's going on. The Veterans of Military Affairs.
I'll move the military
amendment. There's no reason to move that. It's already before us.
Oh, I thought you meant move it from committee.
No.
Okay.
Okay, I could have done it.
We'll probably be done, hopefully.
I will not move the House State Affairs proposal. I will move the other one out, or any other suggestion anybody else has.
The Military and Veterans Affairs added the words as Anchorage and Kodiak. Senate version, which is what the House would do, what the State Affairs would do, leaves it just the Mansfield Valley area.
Mr. Chairman.
As the Senate version came across to Representative Greenberg.
You wouldn't need the State Affairs CS. You would just pass the original. There's no difference between these bills that I'm aware of.
Right.
So you don't even have to worry about this. The question is between the original Senate bill as introduced and the military.
Okay, so the appropriate motion, appropriate actual logistics is not to make up another CS that you move out. So really we have two bills before us that may come like that technically?
That's right. So the question is, it would be, the bill that's before us is the Military and Veterans Affairs, and the motion would be to adopt the original Senate bill.
All right, so if that be the case, in the future, every time there's a, would it only be the House version, it's not a Senate version?
No. If you have two versions of a bill, and the latest version is always the one that's before you. If you want to go back to a previous version, don't do a new CS. Just say, I would like to go back to the previous version. But that then becomes an amendment to the bill that's before us and requires a majority of those present. But you would, in this case, say, I would like to adopt the Senate.
Then what goes to the Finance Committee?
Then this would be going to the Finance Committee in place of this. And then the Finance Committee would make its decision. And it's always
the... Would the Finance Committee then know that there's a... They would not get transmitted to them, the Military and Veterans Affairs?
Well, they would both be with them, but this would be the one that's reported out by the committee.
Okay.
And you'd have a letter that says, we went back to the original bill. Because there's no point in having two bills that say the same thing.
Right.
And the majority leader always moves the latest version. And if that fails, then you go to the next one.
Well, not always. I've seen it. Not, you haven't this year, but last year I've seen it done where not the latest version was moved.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. It can be. You're right. But normally I would move the latest version.
Of course, you would have that option then on the floor as majority leader to move whichever one you wanted.
That's true. That's not something I would normally do. I can't abuse my position. I don't do it. Not saying I would. But I mean, that's not fair.
Kathy?
Mr. Chairman, very quickly, I spoke to Tam Cook about this very issue, and I apologize. It just came up right as you guys were going in. She said that she agrees with Representative Gruenberg. She felt that it was an issue that could be resolved later if you had passed the House CS, the State Affairs CS. But she also said that in the committee report, the members can also recommend which version they would prefer. But as you pass out the bill, the versions go with it. You're passing the bill, and you can make the recommendation.
I wonder what Senator Curtula would actually prefer. Would he prefer that nothing... No place be stated at all, or would he probably be... Obviously, I'm not going to get the votes to move what I want to move. Or would he prefer the Military Veterans Affairs?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Curtula wants the bill out. He does not like the Military and Veterans Affairs substitute.
Would it be better
on his behalf, I would suggest that what he would like is the bill to move out and the committee to vote however it pleases. If he wants the bill to move, if it has to go to free conference, his concern is the delay as we're going towards the end of session. But that's all going to be moot if it doesn't get out of committee. So I mean, he wants the bill to move, basically.
I would suggest for ease and simplicity.
What if we took out all reference?
He doesn't like that.
He doesn't like that.
No.
He'd rather move the bill as it is.
As it is.
Max, isn't it?
I'll entertain a motion.
Thank you.
There is a motion to move the bill from the committee with individual recommendations. Are there objections?
Well, yes, I object to that too, because I'm not done asking questions.
Representative Moyer.
I remove my motion.
I'm still confused. If the House CS State Affairs is the same as the original.
Right.
I don't have the original here.
But that's it. Yeah.
Here's the motion.
The only difference is the words Anchorage and Kodiak, Tom.
You mean in the military one?
Right. Yeah, right. That's the only difference in the bill.
Well, actually, there is a slight difference, but it's just technical. Yeah. One says Commissioner Administration, the other says Adjutant General.
That's right.
Sites.
That's
they're
right.
Not the same. First of all, now that I've seen it,
you're right.
But
excuse me.
If I may, it seems to me, from Senator Petula, that he wants a military and veterans home built. He wants to build in the valley. Sounds. I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea, but the way I read it, it will be built in the valley. Yet you saying, although that's what I think he wants, you're saying that can be interpreted differently.
Mr. Chairman, I think it can be.
Why would you want that different interpretation if what he really wants is what I think it says?
Mr. Chairman, I think
I'm
that...
I am.
Excuse me. I'm sorry if I've added in any way to your confusion. I think the bottom line is that Senator Petula certainly wants the home in the valley. He thinks it makes a lot of sense. The Mat-Su Borough has offered to donate land. There's a lot of reasons why he thinks the valley would be a good location. And he wanted the Mat-Su Valley in the legislation. It's my understanding that this does not constrain. It'll be totally. This is an authorizing bill for military and veterans affairs to build and operate a home in the state of Alaska, Mat-Su Valley, and other locations. There was originally legislation the same exact wording, except instead of Mat-Su, it said Sitka for the Pioneers Home System. And in fact, the original legislation said the Department of Administration shall, I think, build and operate Pioneers Home in Sitka. And obviously, for many years, there are Pioneers Homes all over the state. That didn't. The appropriation process is what will determine where the home will go.
Now, Jay, to put it bluntly, Tom, Jay will be able to go back and say, look, original legislation said Mat-Su, and that's where we should put it. But the final determination will be wherever the appropriation legislation says it's going to be.
Well, sure. If I understand with authorizing legislation, if it names Sitka, Kodiak, whatever the others were, those towns are going to come back and say, well, we're in the bill. You know, it just sets up a mechanism for them to keep coming to ask because they say we're in there. I don't really like the MVA version. I'm just trying to get down to what we really mean in the original bill.
Mr. Chairman, the bottom line is Senator Kurtula wants the Mat-Su Valley. But this does not set that in stone.
Why wouldn't you want to set it in stone?
He'd like to set it in stone, but he can't, unless he appropriates the money.
Well, I understand the money. You could stop it right after the word valley.
We're not even going to set it in jello.
But that still would not do it, because it allows the military and veterans affairs to get going on the program. But still, when the appropriation comes along, they can still say they're going to build it in ADEC. Yeah.
Okay, now maybe we can get back to my original, not my original, sorry, John.
Go ahead.
I think the real issue is that there be support for a veterans home, and that it be moved into such a position in the legislature where it can be approved this session, so that the DMVA can get on about the business of actually researching and preparing and, going through the motions to begin to ask for the authorization. I think that's Senator Kutula's bottom line. So if in fact it meant the difference between passing it through and leaving it, he would be willing to drop the Mat-Su. Is that true?
No.
It's not a true statement.
Excuse me, General, Mr. Chairman. Senator Kutula
removing the camouflage.
Right. If Senator Kutula wants, he is not backing down from his bill in any way, but he wants some piece of legislation to pass
today.
So as his representative, it would be my suggestion that the committee do what it pleases, and any problems that Senator Kutula may have can be resolved later on. Would be my suggestion.
And my desire is to move the original Senate bill. Obviously, Representative Grubbeck's desire is to move the military and veterans bill.
Or anything. I'd be willing to take it out or to say South Central. I'm real negotiable on the thing. I just don't want it to only say that.
Well, when I finally read the Senate bill, got a copy of it, it
change in that last paragraph went from Commissioner of Administration to Commissioner General.
Mr. Chairman, Paul has been trying to get my attention to let it be known to the committee. That is not the correct version. The House or the Senate Finance CS for Senate Bill 44. For Senate Bill 44, moved it from the Department of Administration to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And that is the version that the Senate passed. So it is not the Department.
The Senator Couture, we want.
He wants the Senate Finance Committee version. That is the version that the Senate passed.
And that is the same as the proposed House State Affairs CS?
Yes, sir.
Well, not exactly. We're still holding, but. Oh, okay, you're right. Now that I see it, it is the same. Yeah. Took out all this other stuff here.
Because my thought had been the only thing he did in military and veterans affairs was say Anchorage and Kodiak. That's my recollection.
Wishes of the committee between you two to solve this?
Yes, we have.
Crisis. I'm trying to get my majority leader's trying to roll me here. And
never let it be said I did. I moved the military and veterans affairs.
I didn't recognize you. Representative Shulkin.
Not really recognize Representative Moyer.
Oh, I thought you were Representative.
No,
Representative Moyer.
I'll move the state affairs one. I'm not crazy about the wording, but I don't like the Christmas tree approach in the military and veterans affairs where, let's, you know, that's what happens. You start naming.
Why not take it all out?
More than one, because I'm buying the argument that the Valley might be a good place for it. I'd rather live in the Valley than Anchorage.
There is a motion to move the House. Is there objection?
Yes.
Your objection. There is. Call for the question.
I thought Representative Brockman.
Representative Grunberg.
I thought
Representative Grunberg.
Can't be heard.
Representative Grunberg.
I thought Representative Brockman wanted to be here when we voted.
No, she did not ask that. She said that she could be back around 10 if we needed her. Representative Grunberg, yes or no?
You will be waiting until 10?
No. I got another bill.
Then my answer is no.
No. Representative Shulkin.
Well, Mr. Chairman. Military Veterans Affairs doesn't care where it is. I'm obviously a representative from Anchorage, and I've been adequately chastised by my fellow representative from Anchorage in terms of the consideration that Anchorage not be left out on this thing. However, I do understand that, at least I understand, that the appropriations bill could put it in HUNA if it so wanted to. So, I'm going to roll the speaker, or the majority leader, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
The wishes, Representative Moyer?
Wishes of the majority.
I made the motion.
And I vote yes also. Okay. SB 44.
The irony of it is my hospital tells me they don't want one of these in therapy.
Now, this would be wrong.